to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I've got a brilliant interview for you with David Farmer, who runs dramaresource.com. I wanted to interview David because as writers we sit alone and we create things on our own in front of a computer and the story unfolds in our heads, but what about those people who can turn that creative magic into stories told live, like David does in front of school kids? Or people who can perform them in front of a packed theatre, and David was a theatre director and also an actor. So I wanted to ask David all about how we as writers can use some of the lessons in storytelling and in drama, even for things like dialogue, how we can use those in our writing, and also a bit about how he built his online business, which you'll be really interested in. Basically, from someone who's not a technical person, David has sort of created an online business, so really interesting stuff to come. So just my little introduction today. It is the 22nd of February, and as I sit here, so you'll be hearing this a bit later. Anyway, I also wanted to share with you a little bit of what I've been going through this last week. I really just felt that I didn't want to get straight into writing the next novel. I've got a whole load of books that I'm reading for research. It's going to have a strong theme of neurotheology, which is neuroscience and how the brain works with faith. So I've got quite a lot of research to do, and I've got a stack of books and research to do. So that's one thing that's happening, is sort of research and thinking. But in the meantime, I also had to think about what I want for the rest of this year. Last year, I was really focused on the novel. And although I have already done my goal setting, I find myself changing my goals already, which is fine, we're allowed to do that. So I call myself an author, blogger, and speaker. Those three elements are what I want for my business, and I try to pay attention to all of them. When I first started out, I had a book, but I focused hardcore on blogging because I knew I wanted to build an audience. And then last year, I pretty much focused on author and speaker. My speaking really took off, including speaking in Bali on a writer's retreat and a whole load of paid speaking things, which this year I'm continuing. So speaker is kind of continued. But blogger last year kind of just, I won't say it fell away, because my blog grew loads and I, you know, top 10 blogs for writers 2010, and I have brilliant traffic, and you know, I kept blogging every 2 days, doing the podcast, but I really feel like I didn't stretch myself with the blog. I basically kept the status quo and grew, I guess, organically. Organically is probably the wrong word, but you know, I didn't do anything extra special for the blog. I pretty much just did what I've been doing, which is blogging every 2 days, doing the podcast. I did move more into video, but basically I want to step it up a niche. So a few things have caused that to happen. Firstly is the book Evil Plans by Hugh MacLeod, which I totally recommend for you. And also his first book, which was called Ignore Everybody and Keys to Creativity, something like that. So Hugh MacLeod at gapingvoid.com. I read that book and it kind of kicked me up the bum and made me really think, okay, so I do, you know, my in quotes evil plan. And he talks about the evil plan to get out of the day job and take over the world. I mean, you don't need to take over the world, but to be the best you can be in your area. I had to think about that, and I do want to be full-time blogger, author, blogger, speaker. That's what I want to be. And although I did speak about a few weeks ago now about how great my day job is, you know, and I still feel that. I do enjoy my day job. I would still like to be full-time author, blogger, speaker. So I need to kick it up a notch. So I read that book. Then I've been doing the Blog Success Summit run by Social Media Examiner. And that's been really good because I love audios. That's part of the reason I do this. I love to listen to audios when I go to the gym, do washing up, do chores, go for a walk, whatever. So I listen to a lot of audio. So I've been doing the Blog Success Summit audio stuff. And yeah, just felt really challenged in that there's still a lot for me to learn. I've been blogging, you know, just over two and a half years now, because I had a couple of blogs before the Creative Pen, which didn't go so well, but we've all got to learn somehow. Anyway, so I feel like there's a lot to learn. There's a lot I can do to expand my online business. It's also interesting interviewing David Farmer as well, and we'll be talking about that later. But essentially, I have also joined the Third Tribe Marketing, which is run by Copyblogger. Some of you may be aware of that if you're in the kind of marketing niche, but I'm learning a lot from that already. That's pretty much for people who want to really take blogging seriously as a business, and it costs money, so you have to be pretty committed. But I'm very happy to pay for things that I learn from. And one of the things that I also needed to do is, almost 2 years, 2 years ago now, 18 months ago, I guess, I launched the Author 2.0 program, which is a 12 modules online program teaching people how to use Web 2.0 to write, sell, market, publish their books. And essentially, there's a lot has changed in the 18 months since I did it. So what I'm actually doing in the next month, I guess, I'll be releasing a number of those modules separately. Now, I have got the Blogging for Authors and Writers module, which is available on the store, but I've got a whole load of other ones. I'm going to do ebooks, social networking, author entrepreneur, which will be multiple streams of income, and I'll do multimedia, which is how to do videos and podcasts. All of those things have changed dramatically in 18 months, so I hope that you'll be interested in learning more about those things. As ever, I try and share as much as I can for free, but I also need to start putting some more products out there. I'm also considering doing coaching again. I stopped doing that while I sort of did my novel, but I'm kind of considering doing that again because I really like to help people. So yeah, I've got a few things going. I hope that gives you some ideas as well as to how you can maybe expand your blog and your business. And I, as I said, I recommend that book, Evil Plans, Humor Cloud. If you go to gapingvoid.com, you'll find that. Okay, that's probably enough from me. And yeah, here's the interview. Hi everyone, welcome back to the show. And today I'm interviewing David Farmer. David is currently a drama advisor and storyteller in schools, as well as a yoga teacher. He has also been an actor, theatre director, writer, arts consultant, and also has a brilliant website, dramaresource.com. So welcome, David.
Hi, Joanna.
No, thanks for coming on the show today. So tell us a bit more about you and your background in creativity and drama.
Well, I kind of started as a teacher, but I really only went into teaching because I didn't get the good enough grades to do a drama degree at that time. So at that time, it's kind of like a bit of a backup. So I trained to be a teacher, but luckily it was as a drama teacher. And so I was following my interest. And when I finished my training, I, in fact, worked as an actor in a theatre company, and we were just based in Norfolk, where I still live, and at that time we were living in a small village, and we toured lots of plays around pubs and theatres and streets, all that kind of thing. This was back in the 70s, you know, so it's a while ago, but it was a great way to learn about connecting with audiences, and I was just kind of following my interest and earning very little money indeed. So after a year of that, I got a job as a teacher. I taught for 3 years in a middle school in Norwich, teaching sort of 10-year-old kids. And all that time, I realised that really what I wanted to do was to work in theatre. And at that time, I wanted to act. So I left that job and jacked it in and started a theatre company with absolutely nothing, no money, just sort of like dreams, really. And I managed to get a number of people involved. We found ourselves a free base at the local arts centre, and it just grew from there. We decided that the best way to be able to earn some money as a theatre group was to tour around schools, and so we became a theatre and education company called Tiebreak Theatre. And that was, you know, it's also it also helped that I was already a teacher, so I could use that experience. So I kind of thought, well, I'll do this for a year and then I'll get a proper job again. 24 years later, I was still running that theatre company. And by then we were based in a theatre and we'd performed to 500,000 young people and children around the country and in the USA and Canada and in Europe. So we did a lot. We did about 65 productions to all those children and family audiences. A lot of that was devised theatre. Some of it was writers being commissioned to write plays. And then I sort of started writing plays myself. I started composing some of the music as well. I'd stopped acting, though, because I just didn't have time to do it anymore. Somebody had to run the company. So I moved from being an actor fairly quickly to being the artistic director with no directing experience. So it's all been learning on the job.
Wow. Yeah.
So from there, after all that time, I decided it was time to move on. And I became interested in yoga. And I thought, right, I'm going to now give up the theatre company and become a yoga teacher. So I did. Even though it was going really well, I just decided it's time to move on. After a very short period, I realised I wasn't going to earn any money as a yoga teacher. And although I do still teach yoga, I really do it just because I enjoy it. And I quickly discovered that all my experience of working in the theatre company in schools could be applied in training teachers and providing resources. And with the good old internet, that's what started to take off.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that's brilliant. And why, I guess, why I wanted to talk to you today is, you know, when I was looking at your website, you have so much stuff about, you know, helping people teach drama and lots of tips for people. And I'm on your newsletter. And I'm just amazed at a lot of the stuff you've done. And as writers, you know, most of the audience are writers. We spend a lot of time alone behind keyboards or, you know, laptops or whatever. And, you know, we don't have the practical experience. Most people don't have the practical experience of storytelling that you do to an audience. So I guess one of the first questions is, you know, what are the three most important things about story and telling stories that writers can learn from you?
Well, I suppose I must speak from the point of view of working with children, because that's been my audience. But I think that there are a lot of things that can be learned from that. I think as a theatre director and as a theatre company, we were telling stories very much. And recently, I've kind of got into being a storyteller and going into schools and working with children, telling them stories, doing drama and that kind of thing. And I think for me, one of the most important things is very obvious, really, but there's got to be a good story. I think people will switch off. If there's not something to grab them from the beginning and they want to know what happens next. And funnily enough, I looked on the internet just now and I found a quote from a very cheesy source. I'll tell you the quote first and then I'll say who said it. The most important thing is storytelling. It's as singular and old-fashioned as that. And that is a quote from David Soul.
I don't know.
Don't ask me why, but it sounded good to me. So I think storytelling, I think it's very true, though. I think, you know, you really do have to have a good story. Another thing I would say is you might want to try this. I mean, most writers are sitting there behind a computer. And I've found it really exciting to actually go out and tell stories live to an audience. And I think when you do that, you realise that you're only as good as your last sentence. So especially when you're telling stories to children, because they are not, as some people think, the easiest audience, but they're actually the most honest and hardest audience to work with. And we quickly found that when we were a theatre company that if they're bored, they will, you know, literally move away, start playing, start doing something else. So when you're telling stories, you really learn a lot about engaging an audience. Mm-hmm. And I would say also, if you can, see if you can tell a story live without using a book, so that you're really using your those old-fashioned skills. I think, you know, number one is really there's got to be a good story. Number two, I think, is just to try telling stories live. Number three, I think, is be funny for me. You know, I think that people like to laugh, and I think there's always, even in the middle of tragedy, there's always a bit of comedy there somewhere. And, you know, for me, that's my kind of style, that I think people engage and relax by laughing. So, you know, whether that's applicable to all story writing, I don't know, but it's certainly applicable to live storytelling.
Well, there's so much in there. I want to ask you about that audience reaction, because as a, you know, I do speaking, so I, you know, do public speaking talks to adults, but, you know, it's very similar to what you're saying. You have to engage and react to the audience as you talk, as in, you know, if you see rustlings, you speed it up or change it down or whatever.
Yeah.
But most people probably won't be going into schools telling stories, or many people don't do public speaking. But what many authors will end up doing is speaking at, reading their book at an event, so either a writer's festival or whatever. Do you have any tips for, I know you said read it without a book, but if you can't do that, reading with a book, what are the types of physical mannerisms and voice inflections people should be thinking about when they're reading aloud?
Well, again, I think there's some obvious things. In fact, one of the things I do now, as well as telling stories, is teaching children to tell stories. And the things that I do with them, I think, are just as applicable to adults. And just last week I was doing this, and I was, you know, saying to the children, don't just look straight ahead, engage the audience with your eyes. And I think, you know, that's really important, is that you actually look around, you look into people's eyes, and you bring the audience in. Apart from that, you know, it's just about sort of using gesture, using intonation, expression. Again, I would say that's where the storytelling skills comes in. And I think, you know, just practicing that kind of thing would be really helpful.
And could you just talk a bit about pausing? Because I know this is something that I really kind of struggle with, you know, and often when people are nervous, they don't pause at all. And a pause seems like forever. And you've obviously been, you know, on the stage, and you use that in storytelling. Why is it important to leave space in what you're saying?
I think it just gives people a chance to think. And, you know, you picked up on something there about being nervous. And I think I mentioned about people like to laugh, you know. And it can only be, you only need to say something that isn't really even that funny. But, you know, you're giving people the chance to relax, but just by, you know, a smile or something friendly that you say at the beginning. So I'd say, you know, just remembering to take a breath every now and again is really important, because as you say, you are tempted to just kind of fill that silence with words as quickly as you can. But just give people a chance to take it in. And then if you do that, actually, you'll have a chance to respond to them, especially if it's live. Yeah, it's a two-way thing. I think a lot of people forget that.
No, absolutely. And it's funny, the more I do speaking, the more I understand this, and the more you do, you can respond to people in the audience. And it's very interesting. Anyway, back to writing. So I'm interested in, you know, writing is a very physically still activity, but we're writing about movement and action and story and all of these things. So can writers use the tools of the stage to invigorate their writing? Can we combine the two, or are they completely separate?
I think they are separate in a way, but they have links. And I think some writers would respond well to the idea of using live drama, being involved in live drama. Others wouldn't. But again, referring to the work I've been doing in schools recently, we actually do something which I would call physical storyboarding. And it's kind of something that I haven't really invented myself, but I've just used ideas that were already out there. And what we do is we get the children to start off by talking about a particular theme, and then getting them to make images with their bodies, just still images of things that might be happening and going on in those scenes. And then we send them off to create storyboards based around those kind of ideas. And then from that, again, once they've generated a story, they can actually create sort of like a cartoon strip by creating picture one. A group of children could make what's happening there, moving on to picture two and so on. And actually, for a lot of people, they think and learn kinesthetically. And so those people who do learn in that way and respond in that way probably learn really well and perhaps feel more creative if they moved rather than just sat there the whole time. And of course, a lot of writers are really good writers because they've got a whole world living in their heads. But I think that there are a lot of possibilities of using drama in that way, but it's not for everybody.
No, absolutely. And I guess I'm the type of person, I've never been involved in drama myself. Like, I haven't done it, but boy, my parents met on the stage, and my brother is has been in a lot of shows, and I love to watch them. So I think even if people don't want to be on the stage, most people love a good show, don't they?
Yeah. Absolutely. But you never know. It might be worth, for some writers, having a go at trying drama, because I think you may well find it's a good way to create characters, to learn about the way people talk to each other and so on. So I think, a lot can be found out from doing that.
Mm. Well, let's talk about the dialogue thing, because this is definitely something that a lot of people struggle with, me included, as a, sort of first novelist. I'm trying to learn a lot more about dialogue. And of course, plays, the essence of a play is pretty much dialogue, because it has to be acted. So do you have any specific tips for writers around writing dialogue?
When we used to write our own plays, we used to devise them as a group, and we'd just get up and improvise, and we'd actually record those improvisations and then edit them. And actually got some really quite colloquial dialogue through doing that. So again, I think that's something that people could try. Mm. And when you start improvising, for those who might like to have a go at drama, you start to realise that there's a lot of sort of games that people play when they speak to each other. Mm-hmm. For example, most people in real life when they're talking have some kind of status relationship going on, and that's something that you learn a lot about in drama, and I think that could certainly feed into writing dialogue. In sort of physical life, we obviously use body language and so on, and people might sort of put their arms behind their head or whatever to sort of make themselves bigger, that kind of thing. But there are also verbal games, as everybody knows, that people play all the time to kind of take the foreground or to show that people know more than others and so on. So I think, doing drama could actually help authors pick up on a lot of games that people play.
Mm. No, I really like that idea. The recording improvisation session is excellent. And it's funny you say that as well, but back to the speaking thing, one of the recommendations for speakers is to go along to improvisation type classes or groups, and also stand-up comedy things, which is totally scary stuff. But apparently it frees you more from the constraints that you have. And I think a lot of what you're talking about is more about playing and about being creatively free, which I think a lot of people struggle with. I mean, how do you deal with the kid who just doesn't want to join in, feels shy and embarrassed maybe? How do you get that person to participate? And maybe we can equate that to shy authors.
I think sometimes, actually, you have to give people the chance not to participate. And I think the way that my approach has always been, and I think it's worked, and people have sort of said this about me, is that you know, it's important not to force people to do things. It's, you know, that sort of gentle cajoling and listening are the most important things, really. So I think giving people a chance to do things that are within their comfort zone, first of all, can lead to them being a bit braver later. I mean, for example, I'm working with a poet at the moment in a local school doing a storytelling project. Mm. And one of the things that we did was we did a workshop with the teachers, and we used a sort of stand-up comedy exercise there where they just had to come out in front of everybody and say their name and say one thing that they were really quite good at. So, you know, my name is David, and I'm really quite good at flying kites on a beach. And it was just that. So it's just, you know, finding those little things that might be ways of people just starting to develop a bit of confidence in a fun way. In speaking in front of other people. And, you know, from there you realise that when you see everybody doing it, it's not quite as bad as you might think.
Mm. No, I like that. And because I certainly know a lot of writers have a lot of fear around speaking in front of people. And yet, you know, definitely I know many of my audience want to be big name authors, you know, they want to be out there selling books, and one of the best ways is to be a speaker as well. So it's definitely something people have to consider. So I'm also really interested on your online business, because you've got this brilliant website full of resources for people. You've got a lot of free information, a lot of free courses for people. You've also got things that people can buy. You've got your newsletter, all of these things. You've got books, iPad apps, iPhone apps, live events. You know, you've got this empire building thing going on. So right. I'd like you to maybe talk about how you're successfully blending creativity and business, because a lot of people want to go down that same route.
Well, again, it's been extremely organic. It started, I think it was around about 1997, when I was still running my theatre company, and the internet started to be something that you could actually get involved with. And I created my own very simple website. I can't remember now whether it was before blogs, wasn't it? So it must have been a website. And I suddenly saw that the web was a way that you could publish your ideas. And for years, I'd been collecting drama games and activities. And I had a whole book full of them. So I thought, right, I'll whack 50 of them onto the internet and sort of leave them there for people to share. Okay, I won't earn any money from doing it, but I had a job at that time and it just seemed a great thing to do, you know, to sort of, actually it felt like I'd be getting a bit of recognition, but at the same time sharing. So I sort of left those there and occasionally checked back to see how they were doing, maybe tweak them a bit. When I came to look at the idea of leaving my theatre company, I had a look back at the website, and Google was around by that time, and I found out that the site was number one if you put drama games into Google. And I thought, well, that has to be pretty good. Perhaps I can earn some money now that I need to earn money from doing this. So I left quite a few games on the website, but I started developing a book. And at that time, there were e-books around. Obviously, it's pre-Kindle, so it's all sort of PDF files that people might print out or read on screen. And so I developed an ebook, and I was selling it through the website, and it started to sell like hotcakes. People came to the site, I added more games, and after a while, when I'd sold, you know, several hundred or thousand of these, I realized that I had quite a lot of people who were reading these books and actually might want to try things out. So naturally from there came the idea of running a course. So I ran my first workshop in London and had sort of a dozen people along. And that just grew to the point where I'm sort of running about a dozen of those courses a year. I get guest teachers in and I teach a variety of themes ranging from storytelling to Brechtian directing to teaching drama to primary school children, or teaching drama for special needs, directing plays and so on. So all that kind of, that was kind of quite exciting because it was a way in which I could actually relate to people on a human level instead of just through the internet. That way also, the whole thing was very organic because as I worked with people, I'd find out more about what they wanted, what they needed, and I'd go away and write a bit more on the website. So the whole thing really kind of developed and grew from there.
And that's what you've just said a couple of things there that are great. I mean, finding out what people want, you know, and giving it to them is, you know, the classic way of doing business. And also taking it offline as well. I think that's very powerful. And you're obviously using your skills to do these courses, but yet you grew that audience online. So that's just fantastic.
I think one of the ways in which that audience really grew actually was sort of in the early internet days, you had Yahoo groups. I know you've still got them, and they are used, but they were kind of like one of the first ways in which people used to relate as large, far-flung audiences. And I set up a Yahoo group related to the website, and a lot of people kind of related to each other through that. Mm. And from there, I kind of developed the idea of my newsletter, and that's what really... I think that's what helped the website take off in a big way. Mm. Basically, every time people come to the website, if they haven't been before, they'll get a pop-up window which asks them if they want to subscribe to a newsletter. If they log on again from that same computer, then they won't see that window, hopefully. But a lot of people do sign up. I've got about 10,000 people now on my mailing list, and I have, you know, several thousand people a month coming to the site. But the good thing about that, very simple again, is that if people come to your website and get one piece of information, they might never come back. But if they come and they sign up, as you know, for a newsletter, you've got them. And I start off by sending them a series of simple emails that just give them a few drama games and ideas. And then each month I send out a newsletter with updates on courses and new additions to the site. And that you know, has been a really successful part of the business. And what's great about that is, for example, recently I've got a course coming up and I didn't have many people booked on it, sent out an email last week, and suddenly, you know, it's almost three quarters full now. And so it's a really great marketing tool.
Mm. And you said there it was an organic kind of growth. Have you specifically learned about these things, about internet marketing, about building websites, or, you know, how have you actually done that? Because, you know, you're not an IT consultant, you know, you're not a programmer. Yeah. How did you learn about those things?
I read a lot of books. I read a lot online. When I start to do things, I like to read as much as I possibly can about them. So really, you know, I was sort of learning about search engine optimization and all the rest of it. So all my websites were built with that in mind. And I've really kind of followed how you can build a better profile for your sites with Google and so forth. So really, you know, I've learned about that just by doing it, simple as that, and reading what other people are doing too. And recently I've added in, as you mentioned, things like iPhone apps. And again, that was from something I found on, I don't know if you know the site called Mashable.com.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, which is all about sort of social networking. And I happened to see on there that there was a new company who were offering iPhone apps for something like $25. So I signed up for this. And very quickly, they had to close their list because so many people had signed up. But I've got my iPhone app for $25, which is great.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it's linked to the website. So it's every time I update the site, it updates the app as well. And I've had about 3,000 or 4,000 people have downloaded that. I've actually stopped updating it recently because it's getting a bit old now. It's been around for a year, and I think that the current apps, you know, are a lot snazzier than that one. And the company itself has kind of started charging a lot of money for their apps, as you might imagine.
Mm.
And unfortunately, they provide zero support. So I think I'm going to look around to see what else is out there in terms of keeping that going. But, you know, quite a few people have mentioned, I've got your book, I've got your app, you know, I'm signed up for your newsletter. It's like a whole package that you can offer, really.
No, I think that's marvellous. And, you know, what you're doing is very, you know, the thousand true fans idea, which is a kind of internet idea that you can make, you know, a living, a decent amount of money if you have 1,000 people who buy your stuff and who download your app and who join your website and who come on your courses. And, you know, you've actually demonstrated this. So I think that's just brilliant.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the other aspect is that I earn a regular amount each month from my book. Having started with that ebook and sold, I don't know, several hundred copies anyway, then Lulu appeared on the scene. And I got in there quite early and published my book through Lulu and then on Amazon. And I've now sold, getting on for 9,000 copies of my 101 Drama Games and Activities. So that's actually bringing me in a bit of income each month, which is something that is quite hard to achieve as a writer.
Yeah, wow. No, that is really good. And I really urge people to go and have a look at your website, even if they're not interested in drama, to go and have a look at how you work your kind of ecosystem of free stuff and paid stuff, because that's totally key and that's what we're all aiming for. So I think that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay, so finally, where can people find you online?
They can mainly find me online at my website, dramaresource.com. I am on Twitter. I don't use it that much, but you can find me at Dramativity, or one word. And on Facebook, if you put in Drama Resource, we've got quite an active page there. So those are the three main areas.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, David. That was great.
Okay, thank you. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!